Hello, my name is Ben Burrell and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Thanks for your comments on season two so far. I've had loads of emails and tweets. They're more than appreciated. Quite a few questions cropping up in those emails and tweets as well. I'm going to do a little Q&A video. So if you have any questions for me or about the podcast or thoughts on Dylan himself or his albums or anything, let me know and we'll answer some in a little video. You can email me via bobdylanpodcast.com or tweet us at bobdylanpodcast. So after a brief break last time out looking at Christmas in the Heart, let's return to this classic album. This is 1964's The Times There Are Changing.
Oh, the time will come up when the winds will stop and the breeze will cease to be breathing like the stillness in the wind before the hurricane begins. The hour that the ship comes in.
This is obviously an iconic record in Dylan's back catalogue. It's also one of the most iconic records not only of its time, but of all time. Stop most people in the street and ask them about Dylan, and this would be one of the records that crops up. This is, of course, mainly due to the title track's adoption as an anthem for a wide-ranging set of people and causes, and because it's a brilliant song too. By the point of the album's release, Bob had become a household name and was already a cultural figure. The previous record, The Freewheeling, had also set his stall out as more than just another singer-songwriter. Songs like Blowing in the Wind and Oxford Town had elevated his stock to an intellectual songwriter, whilst the former track had become a hit for pop act Peter, Paul and Mary, helping with the exposure of Dylan to another mainstream audience. This exposure was also helped later that year when he became a more prominent figure in the civil rights movement, singing together with Joan Baez at the March on Washington on August the 28th. You feel all of this was playing into the formation of Bob's third album. It continues the freewheeling's politics, but there's an undercurrent of helplessness, defeat and gloom to it all. Sessions would start on August the 6th, 1963, at Columbia Studio A in New York City. Five sessions make up the final track list, and in common with other Dylan records of the time, they're all close together. We have songs recorded on the 6th and 7th of August, and then again on the 23rd, 24th and 31st of October. Incredible, really, that these songs that would last for more than a lifetime and still be pored over decades later were recorded in a couple of days here and there in 1963. Eight songs were recorded during that first day's session, but only one recording, track 5, North Country Blues, would make the final cut. Another song called Seven Curses, a reworking of the traditional folk song The Maid Freed from the Gallows, was also cut but ultimately left out of the album, finally seeing the light of day on the first bootleg series. The next day was much more fertile, producing The Ballad of Hollis Brown, Only a Pawn in Their Game, Boots of Spanish Leather, and track 3, We've Got on Our Side. An impressive day's work.
Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less.
This is a protest song with a difference. It's not asking to ban the bomb nor end the war. It's a criticism of nations using the name of God to justify their actions. Everyone bears the full brunt of our narrator's scorn. Dylan even starts off by giving himself a dressing down as he sings, "Oh, my name, it means nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up here, the laws to abide. And that land that I live in has God on its side."
The laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side.
Here Bob rejects his ever-growing fame and bemoans his homeland's justification of laws and actions under the name of God. We then have a whistle-stop tour around history of people and countries doing exactly the same, starting with the formation of America in the lines, "The cavalry's charged, the Indians died. Oh, the country was young, with God on its side." Dylan calls out the new settlers, deeming it appropriate to claim the land from the Native American Indians. We then flip to the Spanish-American War and the Civil War of America, both getting the same rap. It turns a little mournful on the next verse as we're now in the First World War, and after a quip about not understanding the reasons for the conflict, Dylan then sarcastically tells us the number of dead is justified in the name of the Lord, as he sings, "But I learned to accept it with pride, for you don't count the dead when God's on your side."
The First World War, boys, it came and it went. The reason for fighting I never did get. But I learned to accept it, accept it with pride. For you don't count the dead when God's on your side.
Logically, from here, we then move to the Second World War and the song's most jarring line as Bob ups the stakes with, though they murdered 6 million in the ovens they fried, the Germans now too have God on their side. This horrific image of the Holocaust is possibly the most arresting moment on a Dylan album. The use of the word fried is so crucial, it has a frenzied, out-of-control, angry quality to it, giving that line a much more aggressive edge rather than using an alternative word like gassed or cooked. We then once again hear forgiveness in the name of the Lord as the Germans are now on our side. This is such a stark juxtaposition that really rams home the point of the song. It's saying you can commit terrible atrocities, but when you come over to our side, the side with God on it, the good side, the right side, all is forgiven. This is an arrogant, misguided stance that sadly still exists in the world today, perhaps even more so.
Though they murdered 6 million in the ovens they fried, the Germans now too have God on their side.
From a personal point of view, I always feel this song shares a lot with great dystopian fiction. I really imagine this soundtracking 1984 or The Handmaid's Tale. Dylan creates a world where everything is fine in the name of God. Towards the end of the song, we hear Bob telling the audience about Judas supposedly committing the most heinous crime of all as he portrays Jesus. He almost jokingly tells the listeners, "You'll have to decide if God's on his side." We then have the final verse where Dylan's guitar playing becomes slower and more deliberate, like he's running out of patience and really highlighting his point, spelling it out for us. He tells us he's weary, and if there really was a God and he really was on our side, then he'd stop the next war. The final verse sheds the song's irony and sarcasm as Bob almost pleads with all parties to make the right choice. As he sings, "So now as I'm leaving, I'm weary as hell. The confusion I'm feeling ain't no tongue can tell.
So now as I'm leaving, I'm weary as hell. The confusion I'm feeling ain't no tongue can tell. The words fill my head and I fall to the floor. That if God's on our side, he'll stop the next war."
This song was first performed at New York's Town Hall on the 12th of April 1963, which also happened to be Dylan's debut appearance at that venue too. He borrows the melody, not for the first time, or the last, from a traditional folk song, The Merry Month of May. Also, the lyrics bear a striking resemblance to words written by Dominic Behan in the composition Patriot Game. Behan's second verse appears to be inspiration for Bob's first verse.
"My name is O'Hanlon, I'm just gone 16. My home is in Monaghan, there I was weaned. I was poor all my life, cruel England to blame. And so I'm a part of the Patriot Game."
Behan called Dylan a plagiarist and a thief in an attempt to get Bob into a lawsuit. Bob would make no public response. Away from the lyrics, the music, like the rest of the LP, is pretty sparse. Whilst I don't think the instrumentation on this record is as straightforward as we think, something we'll look at in a future episode, it is pretty basic on this track. There are some really nice moments, though. Dylan's playing has a looseness to it that does a good job of easing the flow of the lyrics, and it has a nice subtle gear change that I mentioned on the final verse following the song's narrative. Producer Tom Wilson oversaw the recordings. He'd worked on the final four tracks of The Freewheeling, replacing John Hammond in 1963, and would stay with Bob throughout the next album, Another Side of Bob Dylan, and then bringing it all back home, as well as producing the classic Like a Rolling Stone. He would also be behind the desk for other classic records of the time too, like Simon & Garfunkel's debut LP. As staff producer at Columbia Records, he was referred to as one of the midwives of folk rock. And that's kind of the perfect description. You get the sense he was here to facilitate, he was here to organise the young talent rather than mould it. Along with Dylan, he really helps to make sure this record is a strong product. The sessions for the album produced a large number of surplus songs, many which would pop up on various bootleg recordings. Two more well-recognised songs amongst Dylan fans, Percy's song and Lay Down Your Weary Tune, would not make the album's final cut, failing to fit within narrow bounds that Dylan had decided to impose on himself. This is a regimented, concise album that has a stern theme which wouldn't be deviated from. There's a feeling this album had an identity, and if the songs didn't fit it, then they didn't make the album. This less is more approach is echoed in the Sonics. Listen to the mix and how Dylan's voice is really the dominant force here.
I've learned to hate the Russians all through my whole life. If another war comes, it's them we must fight.
Again, to reiterate, it's impressive. This song, along with a couple of other big hitters from the album, was nailed in one day's session. After that incredible second day, a third session was held in Studio A on August the 12th, but nothing was deemed usable. We then have that break in studio time as Bob went on the road with Joan Baez, performing a number of key concerts that raised his profile even further. He would, of course, return to Studio A on October the 23rd with six more original compositions ready to go. The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll and When the Ship Comes In would make the final cut from that day's sessions. Another session was held the following day on October the 24th, which saw The Times They Are Changing and One Too Many Mornings put down onto tape, the latter of which would deviate from the album's main theme of gloomy politics with a love song, albeit a gloomy love song.
Down the street the dogs are barking, in the day is it getting dark. As the night comes in a falling, the dogs lose their bark. And the silent night will shatter from the sounds inside my mind. Isn't one too many mornings in a thousand miles behind?
I absolutely love this song. It evokes a feeling of warm, quiet sorrow, like our narrator is telling us for the first time of his great lost love. It's of course a breakup tune. The use of mourning gives us the feeling that the two involved in the relationship who became one in the nighttime have woken up in the mornings one too many times with regret. Almost like they know their time together isn't good and is coming to an end, but they can't help themselves. By the time the song finishes, it appears we're watching them say their goodbyes. There's also an allusion to a disagreement with that line about being right from each side as Bob sings, "It's a restless, hungry feeling that don't mean no one no good. When everything I'm saying, you can say it just as good. You're right from your side, I'm right from mine. We're both just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind."
It's a restless, hungry feeling that don't mean no one no good. When everything I'm saying, you can say it just as good. You're right from your side, I am right from mine. We're both just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
This is not a bitter breakup. In keeping with the album, it's quite desolate in nature. It's more of a crushing goodbye than a brushing off like don't think twice, it's all right. This has an air of a quiet goodbye. Our narrator is trying not to show his devastation as he sings, "And the silent night will shatter from the sounds inside my mind." This is sorrowful and in that way has a almost blood on the tracks vibe to it. Almost like this is the origin story to that blockbuster. Obviously, being a breakup song means it already has something in common with that 70s album, but when compared to other tales of heartbreak from Bob, the likeness becomes even stronger. Take Sarah or True Love Tends to Forget, for example. Whilst they're both in a similar emotional place to this track, they lack the mood of One Too Many Mornings. But compare it to any Blood on the Tracks tune, and you see the atmosphere of that record is present here. In fact, those lines in Simple Twist of Fate about waking up in a bare room with a beat-up shade feel like a similar setting to the middle verse here, where Bob sings, "From the crossroads of my doorstep, my eyes start to fade, and I turn my head back to the room where my love and I have laid, and I gaze back to the street, the sidewalk and the sign, and I'm one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
From the crossroads of my doorstep, my eyes start to fade, and I turn my head back to the room where my love and I have laid, and I gaze back to the street, the sidewalk and the sign, And I'm one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
That continued line of a thousand miles behind once again puts us in the mind of a relationship negatively affecting both parties. It's stopping our narrator getting to where he wants to be. He's stuck behind, away from his future. Mourning is an interesting word to use too. The way Bob delivers it is almost like he's saying mourning, as in he's mourning a death. In fact, that delivery is constant throughout the song. It's an astonishing performance, really. He sings with a half sigh and it feels so real, almost like Bob has just experienced this very breakup and has stopped proceedings to record the song. It all feels very raw and very personal. Unlike the rest of the record, apart from maybe Boots of Spanish Leather, there's a warmer delivery here. This isn't a clinical depiction of events like in The Ballad of Hollis Brown, say, and it's not a sneer like The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. His delivery of the final line, miles behind, quivers just for a moment as he just about holds his nerve.
We're both just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
This is one of the last songs to be recorded for the record, but not the final one. The sixth and final session for The Times They Are Changing was held on October the 31st. The entire session focused on, appropriately, the album's final song, Restless Farewell. With this, the album was finished, and as we know, it would go on to be a classic. How should it be viewed in terms of its cultural impact, though? That's something we look at next time. That's it for this episode. As I said at the start, if you have any questions for the Q&A video, let me know. BobDylanPodcast.com is where you can email, or you can tweet at BobDylanPodcast. Thank you once again for listening, and until next time, goodbye.